Good afternoon. First is Representative Johnson, House Judiciary Committee, 7 minutes after one. In attendance, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, Representative Ramirez, Representative Samuels, Representative Holmes, Representative Alstrom is excused, tending to her husband. In deference to the resource chair, who's got a meeting coming up at 1:30, we're going to take up House Bill 225. Very quick housekeeping, Representative Coghill has an appointment that he needs to meet. He'll be leaving. I have a bill up at 1:30 in House Finance, but I'll be back down shortly because we're first up and we're going to get through a lot of work today. We're very excited. And then Representative Crawford will be joining us for House Bill 14. So with that, we are going to, somebody will adopt the CS for House Bill 225, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
Mr. Chair, I will move to adopt the CS for House Bill number 225. That would be 25-LS0710/M by Luckup, 411-07.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. So we have before us the CS for House Bill number 225. Representative Johnson, take us through, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 225 is, once again, one of those very simple bills that come to judiciary to get complicated, I think.
like a challenge.
But that, on my part, because you're doing the work of the people, and I appreciate
it. We're digging.
225, basically, there's a slight loophole in the law. If a person is out on bail or probation and they are caught with a gun that is capable or a concealed weapon or a weapon of any kind, it's basically just revocation of their parole. What 225 does is make that a standalone felony, and it's geared against crimes against people. It's not for crimes of lesser crimes, but if you've committed a crime against a person and you're out on bail or you're on probation, this would make carrying that weapon a standalone felony. It probably now's a good time to talk to the difference between the first bill and the CES is we've added domestic violence. So if you're out on bail or parole for a domestic violence charge and you're with a gun, you would also be charged with a separate felony. I do have to apologize because I am in the middle, and my committee meeting is starting at 1, so I am in the middle of the Resources Committee. I have my staff who has probably worked a lot harder on this than this year. There are also people to testify for it, but this has been kind of universally accepted as a good thing and endorsed by most of the law enforcement agencies in the state.
Thank you. Quick question, Representative Johnson. Why is it a concealed weapon? Why do you draw the line between any weapon, a concealed weapon?
Mr. Chairman, I think that if you're out on bail or probation and you wanted to go hunting, I would not be one that would deny someone the ability to go out and provide for their family if they have a long gun or a shotgun. What I'm targeting here is, and I'll give you an example, the shooting in Anchorage at the governor's headquarters. Both of those individuals were out on bail or probation. The shooting, my understanding is it was declared self-defense. No one was charged. It was clearly a gang-related, or let me see, I don't know clearly because I don't want to cast dispersions. There's a high likelihood that was a gang-related incident. Had this bill been in place, they both could have been arrested for felony of carrying those guns. As it was kind of like the police department, we really don't have anything, self-defense, can't. So that's the reason the concealed weapon. We're targeting more gang-related violent crimes that would give the policeman, and I hate to use the cliche, but another tool in their toolbox to take some of these people that are endangering private citizens off the street. So that's the main reason, the concealed weapon. I wouldn't want to take away somebody's ability to go out and hunt.
Lucky for us that you have highly skilled assistants here to keep the Judiciary Committee from complicating your bill.
Yeah.
Too much.
The bill is simple.
Here is
it's
always
me that's complicated. And I appreciate that, and there are plenty of people here that can carry the water. And with that, with your permission, unless someone has specific questions for me, I would
Any questions?
Ask your leave and go work on a pipeline.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? Representative Lynn?
Has the NRA taken a position on this?
No, they haven't. And I would certainly like their input. If you read their position statement, they believe honest people should have guns. I think it's always been their position, and as a member of NRA myself, it's always been their position that criminals should not, and that's sort of what we're getting at here. I would welcome the NRA's input into this. The answer to your question is no, but we would certainly welcome that insight.
Any other questions for Representative Johnson? Seeing none, we'll do the best we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I leave it in very capable hands.
I do have a
representative.
I'd like you to look at the original bill, Section 2, on page 3. Section 3 in the CS on page 3. I think there's a typo, but I'm not sure.
Can we do this with Jeannie and let Representative Johnson go?
No.
No?
Yes, of course we can.
Representative Johnson?
I'm at your service, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
No, go.
Go ahead. Okay.
Thank you.
I heard you addressed the bar.
Yes, I did.
I was going to tell people you were at a bar during lunch, but good.
For the record, my name is Jeannie Osnes. I'm staff to Representative Craig Johnson.
And Jeannie, it's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
You're terrific and so well thought of in this building. And Representative Grunberg, please.
Okay. Jeannie, let's go where I was here a minute ago.
Could I have Title 11?
Sorry.
It's 12, too.
give them back to me. Okay.
I think they're right.
I thought, and I could be wrong, folks, that AS 11.41 is, in fact, all crimes against the person.
Yes.
So it seems to me that you don't need the phrase a felony under AS 11, because everything is included in the next phrase, a crime against the person under 11.41. They just...
Which page are you on?
I'm on of the CS. Yeah. Page 3, lines 23 and 24. For some reason, they didn't knock out one of those things when they drafted the CS, Jeannie, through the chair. Originally, it was a crime against the person. At some point, did you just want to include felonies in there and not want to include the other crimes against the person?
Representative Grunberg, we have the drafter here, so we can pose that
question. Oh, all right.
There you are.
I'm glad to see you.
15 minutes.
If we could.
Sure. For the record, my name is Jerry Luckup, Legislative Counsel for your Division of Legal Services. It's not a typo, it's a request by the sponsor and the Department of Law to include all felonies in AS 11 mm-hmm. and all crimes against a person under AS 1141.
Oh, I see.
All felonies in AS 11 subsumes all the felonies in AS 1141, but AS 1141 also includes some misdemeanors that would be covered
okay.
by this. And the crimes involving domestic violence potentially include some misdemeanors also.
Understood. Thank you, Jerry. The rest of the committee understands that, Representative Grunberg, but we're delighted that you've caught up to us.
He said, I see, says the blind man.
You don't know how much pleasure that just brought me. So nice for me.
Representative Grunberg, have you any more questions?
I was the person who misread that. Sorry. Thank you.
I have no answer.
Yes. Are there any other questions? Are there any other questions for Jeannie or for Mr. Luckup?
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
In taking the requirement away, or making the requirement for concealed weapons, you're going to have people who have been charged but not convicted. So I guess one of the things I'll be looking at is how does that deal with a constitutional right? And I think we need to ask ourselves that question pretty seriously. There are many times people are charged with something that we may put requirements on them, and I just wonder, I understand the need to do this, but I don't know, I wonder about the constitutional right. Have you asked that question along the way?
Not legally. I did, and I was under the impression that the first crime, if you're not charged with the first crime, the second isn't, doesn't follow, but I was incorrect. If you are charged with the first one and you are innocent, and you have been out on bail and you're caught with that gun, you're charged with that second one.
Right.
And we have Annie Carpinetti here. We also have Gardner Cobb from the Safe Streets, Anchorage Safe Streets and Anchorage Police Department, Captain Gardner Cobb, and we have Walt Monahan. He might be able to.
And so the question is going to be an open question, and I'll be looking for the answer. Because to charge somebody a felony on, for example, a charge that might be a lesser charge that they might be found innocent of, to then to produce a felony, I wonder if that's the right direction to go. So I think I would be, I'm going to proceed cautiously on that. So I'll be looking for the answer both from Annie and from those who want to testify.
Excellent. Any other questions? We do have Captain Cobb on the line with APD, and Annie is here also. Any other questions for Janie or for Mr. Luckup?
I may later.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Luckup. Nice to see you. Thank you for all your help. Annie, could you just meander up here on your way? And Captain Cobb, are you with us? You want to testify on this bill?
I am here, and thanks for having me again today.
Sure. Please proceed.
Okay. Speaking on behalf of Chief Rob Yoon, the Anchorage Police Department, we support House Bill 225. It is common knowledge that the gun per capita ratio in the state of Alaska is high, and for the most part, it's not a problem because most of the guns are in the hands of law-abiding citizens who use them for recreation, hunting, and self-defense, and we certainly don't want to diminish this. This has been a concern with a couple of the honorable House members there have stated today. However, with the recent rise in violent crime across the country and the surge in youth violence, which includes the scourge of gang-related motivated crime in Anchorage, and soon to visit other parts of the state, which I'm assuming why my former boss, Chief, I guess now Commissioner Walt Monahan is on the line, it is clear that we need to focus our resources on this scourge and bring down the level of violence. The public is demanding in Anchorage, and we believe that this bill will be a tool to help us in that battle. I'd like to just point out a couple of things to kind of quantify the problem here in Anchorage a little bit. In order to deal with the gang-related and gang-motivated youth crime, we started a unit called a Special Assignment Unit. It consists of six officers and one sergeant. Their primary mission is gang suppression, and sometimes we task them for other things. But anyway, since September of 2005 to date, they've seized 74 guns in their activities out on the street. And like Representative Johnson mentioned, I read a high-profile case that was gang-related in which there was a shooting. People were bailed out. We did surveil them with our special assignment units, observed numerous violations, and when we went to take one of those individuals into custody, he fled and was going into, fled behind a building and was going into his waist belt with his hand, in which we later found a stolen semi-automatic pistol there. And, of course, recently domestic violence also is a problem. It's been a continual problem in Anchorage as well as the rest of the state and the United States. And one of our recent homicides, we had an individual, unfortunately, shoot a boyfriend of his wife and then kill himself. And his weapon at that time that he used was a shotgun. And I appreciate Representative Johnson's work on this, and I don't want to disagree, but I guess from the police department's perspective, we'd like to see this bill broaden a little bit. We think it's a good bill, but we think it would it might be more useful if it included also weapons, such that with youth violence, we're seeing more lethality in the weapons here in Anchorage. We see semi-automatic rifles, long guns, of course, semi-automatic pistols by far and away the weapon of choice. Of course, with the it's public knowledge and a lot of articles and things that part of this culture has to do with guns. And that's why we think this legislation is important. We'd also like it seen to be expanded, just not concealed on the person, but being that person's control or any vehicle in which they have control over. I was looking through the bail conditions previous to testifying today, and under Section 1230.023, where it talks about release before trial in cases involving controlled substance or alcohol, they have some language in there that seemed pretty decent to me under 11A, and it states, having a firearm in the defendant's possession or control or in any vehicle over which the defendant has control. And it also states something about the defendant's residence also. We're not so much concerned about that. What we see anecdotally on the street a lot of time when we're dealing with people involved in this lifestyle, this youth violence gang, is they may be carrying the weapons on them, but once we stop them, they will dump the weapons within their vehicle because they realize that, you know, if the officer coming up or officers come up, perceive them as a safety threat, they will probably get them out of the vehicle and pat them down. But there's a higher threshold, as you all know, for getting to a vehicle and searching it. And I guess I'll just take questions if there are any.
Thank you, Captain Cobb. And for the benefit of the members, we have not only available to us Captain Cobb for questions, but also Mr. Steiner with Public Defenders, Commissioner Monaghan with Public Safety, Doug Wolliver with the court system, and Lieutenant Dial with the Alaska Troopers. So we have at our avail any of those folks. If there are specific questions for Captain Cobb, otherwise we'll go to Annie to kind of address Representative Coghill's concern. Representative Grunberg.
Again, I'll reserve my questions till I hear the other witnesses, but I would hope that Lieutenant Cobb would remain.
He has a 130.
Or you have a 130.
Captain Cobb does, as does Monaghan. They both have other hearings to go to at 130.
Oh, then I will ask a question. Captain Cobb, Representative Grunberg, you would like the language to track AS 1230.023.11A. Is that correct?
That's correct. Something along those lines. Something that gives us a little more ability. You know, like I testified for, we find the guns usually in the vehicle, secreted someplace when we contact these individuals. And like, I'm not an attorney, but something that would give us that ability.
Okay. This seems to be limited at the moment to firearms, but I see that 1230.023, which only applies to release before trial, includes other things, other types of weapons, including such things as knives. And I know that the bill didn't originally go there. Do you, and I'm a little unclear as to why we have 1230.018 when, I'll just cut to the chase here. Do you want to see knives also?
I would like to see a person out on bail for violent crimes and DV be restricted from having any dangerous weapons within their immediate control.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Are there other questions for Commissioner Monaghan? And who else were we going to lose at 1:30, Jeannie?
Was Commissioner Monaghan, is he on the line too?
He is on the line if you have a question for him. And we are gonna hold this bill.
Okay.
So and we're gonna move in just a few minutes to House Bill 90 in just a few minutes. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, I have a question. Same question, Commissioner, that I asked Captain Cobb. Do you also want to see it include all other dangerous weapons?
Well, actually, thank you. This is Walt Monaghan for the record. And that I was quite happy with the fact that handguns or concealable weapons were as it was originally authored. because we started getting into areas of folding knives and hunting knives, and again, it goes back to that legitimate purpose of hunting, and that was stated earlier. So I may not be as restrictive as my my former colleague at APD, but I'm quite comfortable with what your present language is on this one. And just as a point, you know, when you talked about, and this is something that Annie probably could talk about a little bit better, but in regards to the somebody who was charged but not yet convicted, well, please understand that what we would be doing on this, if this were passed, that we'd also just be charged them with another crime. So certainly due process is recognized and would be appropriate, obviously, in both cases, both issues. But it's I like it because it does give us the ability to avoid future situations like we had during the Election Day issue.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions for Commissioner Monaghan? Commissioner Monaghan, thank you for making yourself available to the House Judiciary Committee today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Annie, do you have any...
I'm just here to answer questions.
With the question, I think, was posed by Representative Coghill.
Through the Chair, Representative Coghill, I think that there... I mean, it's a valid issue to raise. Because we do have a constitutional right to keep and bear arms, but there are two answers, there are two reasons why I think it would not, this would not violate that constitutional right. And that is because it's limited to a person who is on bail, so that there has been a probable cause determination that the person has committed a crime involving either violence or felonious behavior. And it's limited to those crimes, and it's limited to carrying a concealed weapon. I don't know whether the right to keep and bear arms goes so far as to carry concealed when a person is on a release for bail.
Mr. Chairman, in a bail hearing, quite often there are conditions. For example, where you can go, who you can be with, those types of things, especially under domestic violence. So I'm actually not against the idea here. I just don't want to get us in a situation where you have somebody who is charged. And it doesn't fit that description. And so you say this is a violent crime charge under Title 11. There's a whole range of charges that can go in under Title 11, isn't there?
When I said a crime of violence or a felony under Title 11. So it covers violent crimes and other felonies that are prohibited.
Right. So it could be a property crime issue.
Yes, it could.
And a charge for a property crime could be you're right that there's a probable cause issue, but it's a lesser of a barrier, isn't it, for the property crimes over the personal crimes?
Through the chair, probable cause is the same standard for all charges. It's just they're just charges for different offenses, and some property crimes can involve threats of violence or threats, and they can be.
But couldn't this, Mr. Chairman, couldn't this go to fourth degree assault?
Through the chair, it would because that's a crime against a person under 1141.
Right. Fourth degree assault is sometimes just an argument.
Through the chair, it's usually not a two-sided argument. One person assaulting another person.
Well,
and it can be putting the person in fear with words or actions.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to involve striking a person.
The only reason I know that is because somebody tried to run down a friend of mine with a car, and his reaction was to punch the guy. He got charged with fourth degree assault when the other guy should have got charged with attempted manslaughter, but it was never brought up in court. So, I mean, you know, those kind of things can... get some pretty interesting charges, and so I'm reluctant to go down this road. And the reason I asked the chairman if we could look at it a little longer, I think I might want to get an amendment to specify a higher level crime.
Okay. That being said, we've got a lot of important people that we're holding for questioning. Are there questions for Lieutenant Dial, Mr. Woolover? Any more questions for Captain Cobb or for Quinlan Steiner at this point? Annie, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you here. If there aren't any questions, then I think we'll let those folks go. We'll set this bill aside. We'll leave the opportunity for you to get a legal opinion and to prepare an amendment to address some of your concerns. Representative Broomberg?
Me too. And if when we have more time and deal longer with the bill, if we have questions of any of these people, we can ask them to be on the phone.
Okay. Very good. Okay, with that, it's 1:30. Jeannie, thank you very much. We'll look forward to having this bill up shortly. With that, it's 1:30. Representative Coghill, we're going to lose you. We're going to lose me up to the finance room briefly. I think because we're already familiar with House Bill 90, Representative Samuels, and I have a couple amendments for that, I think it might be in our best interest to have Representative Crawford come up and take the committee through House Bill 14. And I should be down shortly because we're up first in finance. Representative Stoltz, you're meeting right now at 1:30?
Sure. I'm just trying to be here to help my co-sponsor on 90, but I really want to go upstairs and help you get your bill.
Appreciate that. Representative Lynn, would you take the gavel? Representative Samuels? Oh, the gavel? You'll take the gavel. And Representative Crawford, if you'll present, then I'll be back down shortly. And then we'll come back to House Bill 90. 15 minutes? I would like to know this, but I'd rather be here when we're driving. Sure, take more than 15 minutes.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative Crawford, Assistant. Would you please get us started on this bill and tell us where we are with it and where you'd like to go with it?
There is such a history with this, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And I'm advised here, before we go any further, we're going to have to adopt the CS. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do we have an amendment or the CS?
CS.
Mr. Chairman?
Would somebody make a motion, please, to adopt the CS?
I move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 14. 25-LS0095/V lockup.
Okay. Any objection? No, we'll be working with the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. What? Mr. Chair? All right.
Whoever. The man with the gavel.
Members of the committee, I'm Harry Crawford, and here representing the people of House District 21 and people in my family and others that have been the victims of drunk driving and the carnage that alcohol causes all throughout Alaska and Alaskans' lives. I understood the problem until it came home to me, and it was all too clear after it happened to somebody close to me how much more pervasive the problem is. Today, we'll have a number of people drive drunk in this state. A number of them will be charged. A number of them will cause accidents, and there may even be deaths today because of drunk driving or other alcohol-related offenses. It's been 3 years now that we've had this bill before you. We got it almost all the way through the process 2 years ago, and now we're back again. We're already on version V. And this is just the second committee of referral. We've been through lots of iterations here, and we've had a lot of fine tuning of the language. Basically, what we want to do is try to prevent alcohol-related offenses by preventing those people that have proven that they don't have the ability to handle alcohol, to keep them from buying and consuming alcohol. Presently, the law states that the judges can put on the orders at the time of sentencing that you're not to buy, consume, or enter the premises where alcohol is sold. But nobody enforces that because nobody knows who those folks are. What we wanted to do with this bill is simply give the licensees, the vendors, the ability to know who those folks are and to weed them out of their clientele. We made it voluntary. They don't have to if they don't want to. But for those vendors that are licensees that do want to take those problem drinkers out of their clientele, this would give them the ability to do that.
Would you repeat that last part? What the sellers of alcohol may or may not do, the choice they have here?
They don't have to card people. They don't have to take their license or state ID if they don't want to. There's no penalty, and we've made it explicit in here several places that they don't have to check for IDs. But if they want to, this will give them the ability to know who those folks are that have the orders against them. And we also give a just like the underage drinker or underage violators bill, we give an incentive of $1,000 if the licensee or vendor catches somebody that is trying to buy alcohol under these orders. So. You know, I've repeated this again and again, and I don't know what all each of you know. I'd be glad to try to answer questions as we go along here.
If you'd like, we can, when you finish your presentation here, we can go around the table, see if anyone has any questions, then we call some witnesses after that, if you like.
Okay. Well, basically, this is about prevention rather than just punishment, because punishment alone has not been working. We've got one of the biggest problems in the country here, percentage-wise, with alcohol-related offenses. Nobody else has a bigger problem with alcohol than Alaska. So what I wanted to focus on, what I spent a couple of weeks standing by my wife's bedside waiting for her to wake up and come back around, what can I do to prevent this from happening to other people? Punishment wasn't foremost in my mind. I didn't even care about the guy that did this. What I wanted was to not have this happen again. My son was walking right next to my wife, just barely missed him by inches. Hit my wife. Had he not had a snowplow on and thrown her over the car, it probably would have killed her had the body of the truck hit her in the trunk of the body. Can't tell you how lucky we were that we still have our family intact. There are many, many Alaskans that their families are not intact today because of the scourge of alcohol. There are many people that are able to drink responsibly, and they don't endanger other people. But there are some people that we know they don't. They're not capable of handling alcohol. They've proven it again and again, and that's who we're targeting here. Is you've shown us that you can't drink responsibly, so we want them to not be able to drink in this state.
And so this bill would be not for the person the first time they commit a DUI, alcohol offense, but the second, third, and fourth time. Somebody might just get a DUI once in their entire lifetime.
It wouldn't I don't think that there's any chance of that happening. That's not what we wrote this bill up for.
So this would be the person who gets the second conviction of a DUI. Is that correct?
Basically a felony alcohol conviction. There may be extenuating circumstances if they hurt somebody where the judge might put these orders on, but basically this is the second time and over where it's a repeat offender.
Repeat offender. Any questions for Representative Crawford? Representative Stanley, any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the who's liable. So on page 3, line 27, the licensee. So me and my dad go out to dinner, and he'd order a glass of wine with dinner. And my father, who is 75, and he's not going to get carded for a glass of wine with dinner. If he had one of these red stripes on the driver's license for whatever, is the owner of the restaurant going to be liable at all? And I'm trying to make sure I read this correctly. The way I'm reading it, they are not, but I want to make sure. If my dad and I went to dinner, and I didn't know he had a red stripe in his license, and the bar owner certainly isn't going to card this nice little 75-year-old sober man in dinner with his son, and they serve him a glass of wine, they're not liable for serving alcohol to somebody who is illegal. He is liable, but the restaurant would not be.
If I could clarify for a second, if they ask him for his driver's license and he shows them and he does have a red stripe, then they're liable if they go ahead and serve him. If they don't ask him, they're not liable. I mean, we've made it explicit in here that they're not liable. But what we said is if they knowingly serve somebody that's not legal, then yeah, they're liable.
Okay, so just to make one comment on that, someplace like Tuku Charlie's cards, you told me earlier today, they card everybody that walks in the door. My dad would get carded if he doesn't have an ID with him. He can't go in. Fundraiser, whatever it is, he cannot go to that establishment.
He can go in.
Period.
Will they
let him in?
Not for purposes of buying alcohol. I think under our bill, he's still allowed to go in.
Oh, I don't think they would let him in.
Well, we're not changing that.
You're wrong. No, I understand that. I just wanted to clarify the point, though. If once you get carded, if you got the red stripe, then all of a sudden the liability goes to the licensee. But if it's just some guy sitting down and having a beer with a hamburger, then there's no liability to the guy. You know, for instance, Mike Dugan goes in, even though he looks like he's 19 years old. No, that's fine. I just wanted to clarify that on the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so, again, he could go in to this establishment and order Coca-Cola or 7-Up or any other beverage other than an alcoholic beverage, and he'd be okay.
Yes.
But if he ordered a drink, and if the owner of the establishment chose to ask for his ID and he had the stripe or whatever on it, then he would have committed a crime under this bill.
He would have.
And would the owner of the establishment then get the $1,000 reward?
Yes, the trespass fee or whatever it's called. I believe that's the trespass.
Or whatever you call it, the money.
Yes.
Okay. Reverend Gernberg, do you have a question? Any other questions? Any comment? I'm going to go to some testimony after this. Thank you very much. I see Doug Williver, you're on the line just for questions. Do you have any comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here for questions.
Thank you very much. And from the Brown Jug, we have Ossie Madden and Ed O'Neill. Are you online?
We are, yes.
Would one of you like to speak to this bill?
Just to point out some things about this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we do a lot of bush order business, and 1 in 5 kids below the age of, 15? 18 are going to be sexually assaulted. We'd like to see this stripe on their ID so we could compare it, with our records here, and then not ship any alcohol out to that person in the villages. We've got an epidemic here with these problems with these young folks, that are consequences of these people that can't handle alcohol as well as what Harry's pointing out with the drunk drivers. So we're just applauding him, and we're hoping after Brown Jug's been on this thing for 6 years and Harry's been on it for 3 or 4 years, we're just hoping and praying that you folks will see your way clear to make this thing happen and get something over to the Senate there to where we can wrap it up this year. And this is Ed O'Neill.
Thank you.
Representative, any comment other than thank you? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Dwayne Bannock online.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm just here to answer any questions that you might possibly have.
Any questions for Mr. Bannock? Yeah, thank you. Lieutenant Dial of the Troopers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am online, just available to answer any questions.
Okay, fine. Do we have anybody else online testifying? Okay, and anybody in the audience who'd like to testify on this? I recognize Mr. Crawford in the audience. I want to tell how thankful we are that you survived this, basically an assault. I think this bill is a bill whose time has come. Is there any other comment? I'm going to hold this bill temporarily until the chairman comes back, because he may have some comments that he would like to ask. But other than that, I'm going to hold this bill temporarily and then go on to the next bill on the agenda. That's satisfactory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And just for the record, I will be co-sponsoring this bill. I co-sponsored, I think, a variety of this bill last session.
Thank you.
Okay. What is next on the agenda? Who's next here?
We can do 90.
Okay.
I know Jay does have some amendments for it, or we can go.
Which would be the best one?
220.
Let's go to HB 220.
He's testifying in finance.
Okay. That's the bill on the remote hunting, is it not?
Mr. Chairman.
Are you going to get him? Oh. We'll call it short at ease.
There's some.
Back in session, let's go to HB 90, please. And HB 90 is turned to it. This bill by Representative Samuels and Stoltz, and Representative Samuels is obviously here. Would you give us a quick update on where we are here, just a quick introduction to it, and then tell us about your amendments?
There are a series of amendments, some by Representative Ramis and some by myself. And if you want to start, Mr. Chairman, on...
Let's start with your amendments first.
Page 2, line 16.
Okay.
There's a series of four. It goes page 2, line 16, page 4, line 28, page 5, line 1. And they are strictly grammatical corrections, and I would offer that as amendment number 1.
Okay. Any objection? Not amendment number 1 is passed. Wait, are you ready back there?
The next one I would offer would be at page 3, line 7, as amendment number 2.
Page 3, line 7. Okay.
Oh, and they have it has the letter C at the bottom of the page.
Wait a minute. Letter C at the bottom of the
page. Smarter than me put this together, Mr. Chairman. Letter C at the bottom of the page. We had discussed adding this at Representative Gruenberg's request, adding hindering prosecution, which would be helping hide the body and getting rid of the murder weapon and those types of things after the fact. And I don't think that one would be any controversy on that either. I would offer that as amendment number 2.
That'd be amendment number 2. Any objection to amendment number 2? We're making progress. Amendment number 2 is passed.
I would amend it, but it's my own.
He meant his own amendments there. Do we have any other amendments from Representative
Samuel? We've got 4 more. They're getting a little bit more sticky right now, I think.
You're on a roll.
You're going to get the least sticky.
I'm on a roll. How about let's go to D, I think will be.
D is in Delta.
D is in Delta.
On the same what page?
I would request the committee staff, if I run into something that you know your boss has some questions about, then we will.
Okay. I do have a question about this.
I move amendment number 3.
And if it is moved, is there any objection?
Yeah, for the purpose of discussion.
Discussion. Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, is Quinlan Steiner on the line?
And if we get Ms. Carpinetti. Maybe.
Annie, would you come forward, please?
He's got the line? Yes. Okay.
In the words of Chairman Ram, it's so nice to see you. You look really nice today. And my words, too.
Would you just like me to speak to
this? Yes,
was suggested
please.
By, Mr. Chairman, this was suggested by Quinlan Steiner of the Public Defender Agency, and I think it's a reasonable suggestion to avoid situations. And I think it would only occur in if a person is held on bail for a charge of disorderly conduct, which has a maximum term of imprisonment of 10 days. But just to ensure that that person would not stay longer than he or she could possibly.
Any questions or comments?
I'd like to hear from Mr. Steiner.
Mr. Steiner, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yes, sir. Would you comment on this amendment, please?
This is for the Section 5?
Yes.
Yes, I, through the chair, I just proposed to this language to sort of fix that potential situation where somebody could be held beyond their maximum jail sentence and not be able to obtain a bail hearing. I think it would fix that limited issue.
Okay, Representative Gruenberg?
It certainly would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, it certainly would, but my question was, and it would deal with the people who were, you know, with the very small offenses. But suppose somebody were in a situation where they were in jail for a fair amount of time because of various continuances, either due to the court's circumstances or requested by the prosecution under Rule 45, which is the 120-day rule. There are a number of circumstances for extending the date of a trial, continuing a trial, that are not, as I recall, based upon a request of the defense, but are for other rules of other reasons. And I could see I'm looking at Rule 45D, and there are a whole series of some seven different things, including other periods of delay for good cause. And you could have somebody who the court has ordered the trial delayed for a fair amount of time, and they would not be able to get a successive circumstance release. You know, it may have been, for example, that when the person was initially put in jail and the bail was set, it was contemplated they'd go to trial fairly quickly. And now a number of months have gone by, and this was entirely unforeseeable at the time. I'm not ascribing fault to anybody, but not to be able to do that until they've received the maximum sentence for the most serious charge may not give the court the discretion to review bail in a case where that would be warranted because of the considerable additional unforeseen delay. And I'm wondering, Mr. Steiner, and then I'll ask Ms. Carpinetti, whether that could be addressed with any wording other than the current maximum sentence for the most serious charge language that's in this amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I think those situations could arise. I could envision some language that might address that problem, sort of a reasonable period of time language or reasonable likelihood that the maximum sentence had been reached. There's a couple of avenues you could take to craft an amendment that would create some discretion, but I think you're correct when you view it as it would limit the judicial discretion beyond that. That third bail hearing for those scenarios.
Through the chair, if I could ask Ms. Carpinetti, I'm thinking of a fairly unusual circumstance, but I'd want, at least in those cases, for the court to have some discretion. And the language that kind of been suggested by Mr. Steiner, I wonder if you have any thoughts.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm not concerned about the situation you raised because this statute is drafted with this amendment, and even actually without it, I think you would be able to get a bail hearing because I think the situation of long delays in trial past the right to a speedy trial, it would be such a change in circumstances that it would be information that the defendant did not know about in the previous bail hearing. So I think you could qualify it for a bail hearing under any circumstances, under those circumstances, every week or on a weekly basis. So I'm not concerned about that issue.
Through the chair.
Representative Gerber.
Mr. Steiner, would that clarifying interpretation be in accord with the way you would interpret the current language with the amendment as well?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I would certainly argue that interpretation, and I think it would be a reasonable one, but it would be hard for me to predict how the courts would view that. Any changes in circumstances regarding the case could certainly be argued as being new information.
If I may.
Representative Gruenberg.
That would be my, Ms. Carpinetti, I like your interpretation, but I'm a little bit concerned that we not have the ambiguity, the potential ambiguity that Mr. Steiner is suggesting, and I'm wondering if between the two of you, you could, and I don't mean to interrupt Representative Samuels here, but come up with something that we could ensure that that would be the way a court would interpret it.
Through the chair, do you mean new language for this amendment, or?
Well, the bill and the amendment. I want to be certain. You see, Mr. Steiner was saying that he would certainly argue that, but he would want to be certain that a court would consider that within the concept of the new information, so that he wouldn't get an incorrect court interpretation.
Through the chair, I really believe that this is a that this sort of situation that you're discussing could be raised in a number of ways besides a bail hearing. It would be raised at a motion to dismiss for failure to prosecute or various other procedural methods. It could raise this to the attention of the court. I guess you want some sort of third ability to.
I'm not sure exactly, I'm not at all thinking that this would be a motion to dismiss or anything, because the situation I'm postulating is, and this is just an example, there have been one or more successive extensions of the 120-day rule, and now it is appropriate that the defendant be allowed to seek a bail review in view of the unforeseen additional time that they're sitting in jail, and that there are some other circumstances that would ensure that they're not a danger to the community and not likely to flee. But for example, let us say when the initial bail hearing occurred, I'm talking about the real bail hearing with counsel and everything, they suggested person A and person B and maybe even person C as third-party custodians. And for some reason, they were either rejected or later became, unable to serve, and the person has languished in jail. And this time has now extended considerably, and they now would come up with another person who clearly would be available, a likely good candidate as a third-party custodian. I just want them to be able to bring the matter before the court.
Through the chair, I think that is covered on line 24, because that is new information. A third-party custodian that you did not have available before, you could schedule a bail hearing to present that to the court, because it is information that has newly been known to the defendant.
I just want some certain that we... Mr. Steiner, through the chair. Mr. Steiner was...
The chair back. But I was going to tell the chair, Representative Samuels was next up to speak when you came in.
I'll yield to Representative Samuels.
on amendment number 3, if we adopt the amendment, my staff is more than willing to talk to the PD and to the Department of Law some more to see if something more needs to be done. That's the concern that we tried to address in the amendment. So,
Do you want to do that in finance then, or just go to
finance?
Yeah,
it's gonna pick up a finance referral because I believe it's got a fiscal note.
With that assurance, and Ms. Carpinetti and Mr. Steiner, my office is available too to assist. I would just ask that you look and see what if you think anything needs to be done. This isn't something I want to do on the fly. And I remove my objection to the amendment.
Very good. That would seeing no objection, then amendment number 3 passes.
For the chair's information, this was one of only two areas I did have concern. There's one other area.
So far.
No, I've seen all the amendments. Well, I haven't necessarily seen yours. Certainly, Representative Sandman.
And I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, if I could move amendment number 4, which has the letter F, as in Frank, at the bottom of it. And I would yield to Ms. Carpinetti on amendment number 4.
Well, through the chair, this was actually suggested by Quinlan Steiner, the public defender. But I will speak to it briefly, and he can correct me if I make a misstatement. It provides that when you're talking about when a person gets credit against a term of imprisonment for time spent in a treatment program, that if the courts require that these treatment programs be similar to jails, and that so that the bill states that the treatment program must require the person to be confined at all times to the grounds of the facility or in the physical control of an employee. This would give an out for those times when the person in the treatment program.
I'm sorry, Annie, I don't think we're on the same.
I'm sorry. What? I apologize. Oh, sorry.
F is in Frank.
Was there an objection raised for the purpose of discussion on this?
Anyway, brief at ease, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we'll take a brief at ease, please. The record is 5 minutes after 2. We have set House Bill 90 aside for a few minutes.
I move. Putting our motion.
We have back before us House Bill 14. Is that the right number?
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Crawford, it has been an excellent experience to work on this bill with you for the last 3 months. And I want to congratulate you and your staff for really meeting a lot of concerns and objections that I had along the way. I think you did a wonderful job. It was a pleasure to work with you on this.
There's no doubt in my mind that this is a better bill today than it was when we started.
Yes, sir.
There's been lots of fine-tuning and lots of comment, and absolutely more heads are better than one.
Or two really hard ones. January. So we got a lot of softer heads between us.
Wait a minute.
Anyway, with that, yes, Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill 14 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection.
Congratulations. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Appreciate it greatly.
You've got great kids. Great kids. With that, we'll go back to House Bill 90. Thank you, Representative Crawford. Annie, come on back up for more punishment.
I'm sorry. Amendment number 4 has the F on the lower right.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
For the record. For purpose of discussion, this is amendment number 4.
Correct.
I'm going to object because this was one I did want to discuss a bit. This was the other one. And if I may inquire.
Yes.
Ms. Carpinetti, we have Mr. Peoples here from Corrections. I don't have any problem at all about subsection 1. My question simply goes to subsection 2. And my question is, as I understand it, the normal minimum term is for a person convicted of a felony sex crime, 15 years. Is that correct?
Through the chair, no, that's not correct. It's a minimum of 5 years for a Class C sex felony, a minimum of 10 years for a Class B sex felony, and a minimum of 15 years for unclassified sex felony.
This could add up to a maximum of 20 more.
We're listening.
No, I just was waiting for her to get her. Could add up to a maximum of 20 more years for a Class C felony. And I think in some cases, and Mr. Steiner may be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but judges may well want to go to the maximum to comply with what they would see as legislative intent. What would be the need for having an additional, say, 20 years for a Class C felony, and even it would be 15 years for a Class B, and 10 more years above 15 years for a Class A? Why would that be necessary?
Through the chair, I think the rationale that that the legislature had when it adopted these long periods of probation after release is because that is, from what I understand, the correction said, believes in terms of managing sex offenders, the best way to do that is to have pretty serious supervision, polygraphs at regular intervals, and various other pretty active supervisory control to so that corrections, and I'd love to have Mr. Peoples come up and assist me on this, so that corrections can spot when a person might be moving away from the from the control that they need to have on them to avoid reoffending.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe we could invite Mr. Peoples from Corrections to come up and.
Yes, Mr. Peoples, nice to see him.
Enlighten us here.
Well, for the record, Dwayne Peoples, Department of Corrections. Regarding our initial issues with this part was it did not define sex offender. It was fairly open to anybody, and we felt that that would be quite a heavy burden up in the future for the department. As far as fiscal impact on this, we did not even bother to calculate what would be beyond 10 years. I think a lot of the people you might have reoffend would probably do it under 10 years. Or 15 or 16 years. As far as the impact out to 25 years, I'm not real comfortable in saying either way how this would impact.
If I may,
Representative Grimberg.
Would the department feel more comfortable if instead of saying a flat 25 years, if we were to say 10 years above the mandatory minimum? Like that?
Let me ask a question, Andy. This is not mandatory, it's discretionary.
That's correct. This is just to, a judge does not have to give a person 25 years of probation under this provision. It's just for those cases where the court believes that a person needs that supervision for that period of time. And the reason is that treatment people tell us that dealing with sex offenders, the goal is to extend the period before reoffense. So the longer you can have supervision over people who are sex offenders who are out in the community, the better. And that's why they have regular requirements for regular polygraphs and reporting to their probation or parole office before they move away and are come out from supervision, because it's very difficult to treat sex offenders in any other way besides controlling them and avoiding reoffense, delaying reoffense, really, which is why these long periods of time are available. They're not necessary for a court to impose.
I remember from the policy conference that Senator Bundy and I attended that many rapists, phrases, you retire from rape, that as you get older, you're less inclined to commit that sex offense. Whereas pedophiles never, it's a sickness that they manage, their whole lives. But it's retire from rape is the professional phrase, because a 60-year-old is less inclined to do it than a 35-year-old, hence the benefit of a 25-year period to keep your eye on somebody. I think so.
I was wondering, to the chair, Mr. Peoples, would
If it is not mandatory and the judges have some guidelines to do it discretionary, I cannot document what the impact on 25 years will be. Other than it'll be a while before we can figure out the actual cost of this and the effectiveness over a quarter century.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if the third expert we have on the telephone, Mr. Steiner, would have any comments on this?
Mr. Steiner, any comments?
On the extension of 25 years, or to 25 years?
Yes.
In terms of the benefits, was that the question?
Yes.
I really couldn't speak to whether or not there's any benefit to this. I think probation and theories of supervision are a little bit outside of what I'm an expert in. I mean, I could sort of tell you what I suspect might be the effects of it, but I think they'd be similar to what Mr. Peebles was saying, that, you know, most of the violations would probably occur in some period under 15 years. And I'm not sure what would happen beyond that. There'd be some percentage, I suppose, that would still have remaining time left on their case if they didn't violate. Or somebody might just not violate at all in 15 years, and then I don't know what the expectation would be that next 10 years they would commit a violation. So,
thank you, Roger. I would just have one more question.
Yes, sir.
Getting away then from the 25 years, because I don't hear any serious objection to that. The other thing that Mr. Peoples raised was the definition of felony sex offense. Does anybody want to comment on that? Is that language sufficiently precise? I'd ask again, Mr. Peoples.
I would also,
the chair,
through the chair to Representative Grunberg. The revised language in Amendment Number 4 narrows the population down to the sex offenders, and I believe I would defer to Annie on the felony issues. The original language that we raised a little bit of issues with was the pool of those going out to 25 years was wide open to all offenders. This amendment addressed their first issue.
So you're okay with it?
Okay. Representative Lynn?
You know, I'm sorely tempted, although I won't do it. I'm fairly tempted to offer an amendment to amendment to put these people in jail and throw away the key. And if I thought we could do that, I would offer the amendment to the amendment.
Point made.
I'll withdraw my objection.
Very good. Seeing no objection, Amendment Number 4 passes. Representative Samuels, which one's number 5?
Let's go with number 5 would be B's and Bravo.
Annie?
I move Amendment Number 5.
Is there any objection to Amendment Number 5?
I've defined it.
With bees.
Yep, bees and boys. No objection.
Just to have somebody tell me what it does. through the chair.
You almost made a row.
Mr. Chairman, this suggestion was a result of conversation between law and corrections to try and avoid a huge fiscal note because of concern and a concern by corrections that this might cost a lot of money to prosecute. And so right now what the amendment does is it provides that the real concern that we have had in suggesting this was what happens when a person, a sex offender who's on probation because the law requires them to be on probation but has run out of incarceration time, so there's no hammer, nothing to encourage the person to continue to take their polygraphs and to check them and go to their treatment programs. How do you enforce those requirements? So this provides that it's a crime only if the person has no more time left on his or her sentence for the underlying sex offense. And it is suggested just because of cost
I will remove my objection.
I see no objection. Amendment Number 5 passes.
And my last amendment is E is an echo, Amendment Number 6. And for clarification, the chairman also has one of the two ones that the chairman has already been adopted as Amendment Number 1. The other one is kind of along the same subject, maybe just so everybody knows it's the same thing. I'd move Amendment Number 6 to page 4, line 24.
I'm sorry, just for clarification.
E is an echo.
Are we then going to take up number one? The Rammers number one?
I think we'll get there in the discussion on this.
I see, okay.
See where we want to, okay, where we want to go. But I move amendment number six as is right now.
All right, is there an objection? Okay. Right, so seeing no objection, amendment number six passes. All right, and is that the balance of your amendments? Okay, and then has any of my amendments been introduced yet?
Representative Samuels' amendments first because you're out.
Mr. Chairman, one of your amendments I also had as an amendment as first. Amendment number one.
Right.
And the other one I wanted to talk to Andy about. I don't think I like it, but I understand.
I understand, and I believe that amendment number seven, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Would be the only thing that we're concerned about is lines 11 through 13. Is that right, Jane?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, would that be the one labeled K2 or table?
Susan, that would be a K.2. I'm going to move that as amendment number seven. However. I'm going to delete lines 1 through 10. I believe those were covered by Samuel's amendment. Is that clear for you? I move amendment number 7, which would be lines 11 through 13. Is there an objection?
Just a minute. I want to look at it.
I'm confused. Lines where? This
was regarding the treatment programs we had to be escorted.
Right.
Is it K2?
Oh, yeah. No objection.
I object for.
Okay. Your objective is number seven?
Okay. Yes, I'd like to.
Okay, so the objection is maintained on amendment number seven.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about it.
All right, and. And Annie, would you help me interpret this? I believe that it means that if the applicant's attorney did a lousy job, is that kind of the gist of it?
Yes. The limit on the post-conviction relief section is addressed to Granola's claims, which is the second application for post-conviction relief, claiming that the first his or her first attorney did not provide effective assistance of counsel. And I'm trying to understand what this amendment does. I haven't gotten there yet. Okay. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I think I can answer.
We believe it just doesn't change the meaning, it just keeps it consistent with the title. So we think this is, for all intents and purposes, a housekeeping amendment, we think. Is it Representative Grover?
Yeah. The term is ineffective assistance of counsel, and that's the technical term, and this is what this says.
It's line 7. Yeah, I have no objection. I think it's better.
We're good with this.
Yeah, objection is
objections.
Not everybody asked me. Right,
so amendment number 7 passes, and then amendment number 8 would then augment amendment number 6. It was just passed. That would be K.1, Susan. Page 4, line 25, following facility. And then I think I'll offer this as a conceptual amendment so that you can integrate the language with amendment number 6. And so this addresses this amendment. Who made the objection? Representative Samuels objected. And so the purpose of amendment number 8 is that the whole notion of rehabilitation, for whom it is appropriate and applicable for some of the populations that find their way out of recidivism and back to being productive members of community, do that by participating in Salvation Army programs, by leaving the facility and finding a job if they're on a 12-month rehab. You can't just sit inside a facility for 12 months getting better. At some point, you have to integrate the outside world with the rehabilitation center, and we want to leave room for this. And and I certainly appreciate the bill sponsor's concerns with the with House Bill 90, which is why I am a co-sponsor and proud to be standing there with you, Representative Samuels. But there is some part of the population, and I employ some of those people from time to time. Some of them are recidivating, and some of them are on their way to wellness. And I'm mindful of those that are on their way to wellness, even if they're not an extraordinary part of the population by statistical definition. There are some people that are trying to ladder their way back into being productive members of a community. And that is for whom conceptual amendment number 8 is for.
I would defer to Ms. Carpinetti. Walk me practically speaking, and then philosophically I can argue just about it in just a second, but practically speaking, how does this work?
Mr. Chairman, the concern that I would have, or the department would have with this, is that Nygren, what we call Nygren credit against a sentence of imprisonment, is supposed to be for treatment programs that are similar to incarceration. That's what the courts have already told us in the Nygren case and various other cases interpreting it. And our concern that a treatment program where a person can leave the program and go to work unsupervised by anybody in the program and come back is not similar to incarceration. For that reason, we would suggest that it should not be qualified for.
I appreciate that point of view. Mr. Peoples, we talked yesterday that North Star, for instance, because it's part of the Department of Corrections, would not fall under the definition of a treatment center. Is that correct?
To the chair, yes.
What about the Salvation Army? I thought we heard about programs like that. Would that not be also considered a rehab? Wouldn't that be a rehab center?
To the chair, I believe we have some treatment beds at Clitheroe Center for those who have been sentenced, usually on their way phasing out of sentencing. I would have to take a look. I believe Clitheroe is operated by the Salvation Army. But they are not such as the standard community residential center as North Star. And those are usually post-sentence.
This section deals with pre-sentence. What treatment programs you go to before you are convicted and sentenced.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grimberg.
Let me just ask if I may have a little latitude. And by the way, just for the record, this would be integrated with Amendment Number 6, so this would be another exception. Just that's for the record. This goes in subsection C, and is subsection C, as I understand it, it's before the trial, right?
Through the chair, generally, yes.
Or at least before sentence.
Yes.
So the person is under a court jurisdiction at the time.
Yes.
How about, are you about to say something, or are you just stroking your mustache?
Stroking my mustache.
Okay. I thought I saw the hand move. And I think this is what the chair's intention is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this would only be allowed under two conditions, and we could put this in your amendment. Number one, that it's part of the treatment program, and number two, that the court would specifically have to approve it. Is that
your
intent, right?
Yeah. The bill already requires the court to approve the program before the person goes to it in order to qualify for it.
I'm talking about a specific approval of this specific thing, that if the treatment program wants to do it and the defendant wants to get credit, that the court would have to be informed of this and would have to approve it before credit could be given.
So interesting.
And I would add language to do that. if that's the sponsor's intent and if that's agreeable.
So the interest I have is the Sober by the Sea program. This young lady went and spent a year there before sentencing. She did not leave the grounds. In this case, there was no work component. But had there been, she would have either not been allowed to participate in the work piece, or she would not have been allowed to get credit for being confined during her pre-sentencing period. And I just don't want to restrict remedies for bringing people back into the healthy population of our community. I'm separating in my mind, and perhaps this is the concern of the Department of Law, I'm separating grievous offenders from those who can be rehabilitated, recognizing that the statistics that came out were not very promising for you know, as it relates to recidivism. Okay. I'd like to amend my amendment. Can you make me a copy of this?
Just do this. Say this out loud.
Or maybe you could
probably better.
Well, I don't have it anymore.
Oh. I just pass it.
If we could, maybe.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's continue the question.
Maybe Representative Holmes could explain what she was saying.
Our wonderful committee aide just took the language. When she brings it back, I'd be happy. What I just brought to the chairman's attention is some language that was actually, I believe, drafted by Quinlan Steiner that incorporated both Representative Samuel's Amendment 6 and the same general idea as the chairman's Amendment Number 8. And I was going to put that in front of the committee as an
alternative.
To me, it turns it more into a philosophical question. If the young lady in your case had been the one that had destroyed your home, probably have a different take on the punishment. The punishment is the punishment.
You know, with all due respect, Representative Samuels, the people that destroyed my home, nothing happened to them. And I had to live with that.
And it frustrates you.
It made me run for office.
Yes.
Didn't it do the same for you?
Yes, it did. And
it's a little less bad, a lot less bad what happened to me. But the point is still made.
But what we're going to say here is somebody that can afford to go, they get treated differently than somebody who cannot afford to go. They get less jail time. Going to work is not jail. It's as simple as that. You hop in your car, you leave the facility, you go to work, you visit with your friends at work.
Depends on who you work with.
it is not the same as going to jail. So you're treating different people. One of the points of going to jail, or going to prison, is to punish you for what you did. And now you're punishing the same behavior in different ways based on income, personality, something. The behavior should be treated the same, whatever the behavior is. If you have the same behavior by two separate individuals, and you've got one person who can afford to go to this, or luck of the draw gets a slot in the facility, then they should still have to serve their time as part of the punishment.
But Representative Samuels, 6 does the same thing. I mean, if you got a better attorney because you can afford one in the private sector, you're going to enjoy a whole lot more court appearances and meetings with counsel than if you're subject to the public defenders. There is no equity in the system. So I mean, philosophically, I'm interested in the wellness of broader communities and people rejoining healthy communities. And I'm less interested in who gets a better leg up and who gets a lesser leg up. I was one of the worst athletes ever, but I still got to play at least an inning a game. And it was always troubling me that there were other guys that got to start the whole baseball game and I only got to play right field 6th inning. And that's the way it goes. It's not fair. Still isn't fair, but Representative Lynn?
I brought this point up last time with the Dream Team and so on, but we fixed inequity where we can fix it. this may be the place where we can kind of fix that inequity. We can't fix, you know, who gets the expensive dream team and who gets the new public defender and so on, but there's some things we can fix. Maybe we ought to fix what we can.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I like the language generally as suggested by Mr. Steiner with one addition.
Okay.
That's right. I'd like to offer an amendment to your amendment.
So right now amendment number 8 is before the committee. Do you want to amend number 8?
Yes,
is that
please.
Correct? Okay. So amendment number 8 is before the committee. Susan, and the amendment to the amendment that you're proposing is
I'll say this slowly so people can write it. After the word work, the second word work, or from work, please add the following. Quote, as required by the treatment program and as specifically approved by the court for credit. I'll say that again. As required by the treatment program and as specifically approved by the court for credit. And that is, I want the court to specifically know that the person is going to and from work and working and to approve that. And that'll be part of the treatment program.
I'll accept that as a friendly amendment. So is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment? Okay, then new amendment number 8 is stated as such. Is there any more discussion on amendment number 8?
I will remove my objection to amendment number 8, that language on there. So as I understand this, and I'd ask Ms. Carbonetti again, the court would have to say, yes, this work counts. I'm going to go to the food factory, and it counts as good.
Yeah. Usually I like those references, you know, but that one kind of hurt.
I'm sorry. That was just there. Working at the food factory. I will remove my objection to amendment number 8. The court would have to agree that going to that job is the same as going to jail. And if the victim of that crime so chose, they could also go to that court and go, that is not the same as going to jail. They're working on it.
Right. Susan, I will object to the example.
For the record, Mr. Chair, that was my specific intention, that the court and, if necessary, the victim could be heard on that issue, and the question would be whether the person would get credit. But that's exactly what I intended in that amendment to the amendment.
Nicely done, Representative Grunberg. Representative Holmes, thank you for bringing the language to our attention. Mr. Steiner, thank you for your help in drafting that language. I believe there are no more amendments. Let's bring this back to the committee. Is there any additional committee discussion?
The amendment was adopted, right?
That amendment was adopted, that's correct. The Representative Samuels' objection was removed.
Do you want a motion?
I believe so. I think we're ready for a motion.
The bill as amended with fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, House Bill 90 passes from committee. Mr. Peoples, thank you very much for spending time with us. You did a great job in assisting us. Thank you. And Annie, as always, you're very valuable to us. All right. With that, we want to get to our friend Representative Book, who is House Bill 220, is that right? Representative Book, this issue made it to my editorial board in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I got a very favorable editorial a few days ago. I don't know if you've seen it, but you should go back and research the archives in the Daily News Miner. And they don't like any of my ideas, but they sure do like yours.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do appreciate the opportunity to come before you on this issue. I realize that it doesn't have maybe the intricacies of some of the things you looked at before. However, in my opinion, it has the same degree of heinous disregard. Recently, a new phase called Internet Hunt. First of all, my name is Bob Book, and for the record, I'm from District 27, which is South Anchorage. And I do appreciate being able to come before you this afternoon. Yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. And we do have online, we've got Kevin Saxby from Fish and Game Department of Law, Jack Clutch from Alaska Professional Hunters, Lieutenant Burke Waldron, a trooper, and my friend from Fairbanks, Dick Bishop with the Alaska Outdoor Council. And I see Jeff Logan is also here in the room. So you've got a lot of support. Mr. Book, go ahead.
I'll be very brief. Recently, a new phase called Internet hunting was brought to my attention. At first, I thought it was a joke. I have since found out that it's not. Internet hunting is when a person anywhere in the world can shoot an animal from their living room by hooking up their computers. Yes, sir.
Are you going to read your testimony to us?
I'm going to try not to, but I just came from another committee and I was...
Come on, man.
Concentrating on that
a little bit.
All righty. This is endorsed by a broad spectrum of the community, and I think this is a very universally supported bill. I don't think that you'll find very much opposition to this anywhere you look. It's one of the few places I've ever seen where people coming together from almost every spectrum. And in all truth, without going into very much detail, I would like to let those that have come online and have been waiting a long time to testify to say what they have to say. I can be as brief as possible on all of these things. I am here to answer any questions. There are some people out there with a great deal more expertise in this area, and I would like to let them testify.
Thank you. And if you want to make copies of your written remarks for the committee members, you're more than welcome to. We appreciate the introduction. My apologies to Mr. Clutch. It's Joe Clutch is with us with the Alaska Professional Hunters, and I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, sir. With that, we'll go to you first, Mr. Clutch with the Alaska Professional Hunters. Are there any questions for the sponsor? Thank you. Mr. Clutch?
Thank you, Chairman Ramirez, members of the committee. Again, my name is Joe Clutch. I currently serve as president of Alaska Professional Hunters Association, representing the vast majority of Alaska's hunting guides. And as an organization, we're committed to fair chase hunting practices and ethical standards of conduct. We believe that the intent of this bill is absolutely correct. If I may suggest that the author of the bill and others refrain from referring to this practice as hunting. The organized killing of an animal via cyberspace and robotics is not hunting. True hunting is a problem-solving exercise which involves planning, knowledge of the species being pursued, its habitat, and a hunter, especially in Alaska, has to be prepared to cope with all the elements of nature, common to outdoor activities, especially in this state. Hunting's a real-life drama that can involve doubt, frustration, anxiety, discovery, quite often great physical and mental challenge, joy and disappointment. And in this setting, the outcome of the process is by no means assured. we just believe that this bill is appropriate and the right thing to do. We can't allow these kind of activities to occur in the state of Alaska. And there's been a number of the other states in the lower 48 who have taken similar action to that outlined in this bill. So we offer our wholehearted support and encourage the committee to do the same. And I'll thank you for your initiative in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clutch. Are there questions for Mr. Clutch? Thank you for being so patient, sir, as we work through these other issues that were before us today. Next, if I go to Lieutenant Waldron, State Trooper, please. Lieutenant Waldron?
Yes, again, for the record, this is Lieutenant Burke Waldron with the Wildlife Troopers. And through the chair, I'd just like to add that the troopers certainly sponsor this bill, and I'm here mostly just to answer any questions that may come up.
Thank you, Lieutenant Waldron. Next, can we go to Dick Bishop up in Fairbanks at the Alaska Outdoor Council? Hi, Dick.
Good afternoon, Chairman Ramirez. Good to hear you.
You too.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Dick Bishop. I live just outside Fairbanks. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Outdoor Council, of which I'm currently president. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill. The Alaska Outdoor Council supports and applauds the efforts to put this bill before the legislature committee substitute for House Bill 220. And we thank Representative Book and his co-sponsors for putting it forth. The common value across the spectrum of ethical, responsible hunters is the satisfaction of being personally involved in the natural course of events that affect wildlife and wildlands. And whether the hunter's prime motive is to fill the freezer or drying rack or to find a prize specimen to preserve, admire, and honor for a lifetime, the hunting experience provides the challenges and the lifelong satisfaction. The hunt's celebrated in different ways among different cultures, but the bottom line is that the personal experience is what counts. The prospect of computer-assisted remote hunting flies in the face of all that is most valuable in the hunting experience. Hunting is not a pursuit that should be reduced to another armchair video game or to a shopping junket on the internet. The values associated with hunting and the wildlife hunted deserve more respect than points on a video game and more initiative than a credit card purchase. Please pass House Bill 220 to make clear that hunting is too important to Alaskans and many of our visitors to trivialize by allowing it to become another form of electronic diversion. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions if the committee has them.
Dick, thank you for your testimony. I don't see any questions. I'd also like to thank you for the work that the AOC has done on the Chitna dip netting fishery, and applaud your efforts in that area as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. A pleasure to hear from you. With that, we also have Kevin Saxby with us. Mr. Saxby? Mr. Saxby, are you there? Appears that we have lost Mr. Saxby. Are there any amendments from any of the members?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Saxby?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The green light was here, and apparently it wasn't connecting through somehow.
No problem.
I'm the senior assistant attorney general that works with the Division of Wildlife Conservation. I'm speaking on behalf of Director Robus, who has taken ill today. Very much in keeping with the previous comments, I can assure you that the department supports the intent and the most of the language of the bill. We have some suggestions for improving it, however. The Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Game have had quite a lot of experience over the last several years in ADA compliance, Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. And subsection B of the current language is a very broad exemption that more or less addresses the ADA compliance situation.
Mr. Saxby?
Yes.
Let me just have you pause there for a second just for some housekeeping. I didn't pay attention to note that we need to adopt the CS for House Bill 220. Would somebody do that?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 220 Resources 25-LS0795-C is our document.
I'm going to object because we have a new CS.
Okay, good. There was an objection.
Mr. Chair, I think you want to adopt the E version.
He is in error. That's correct.
That's what I meant to say. 0795-E.
Okay. So we have the E version in front of us. And Mr. Saxby, we're back to you. And then Representative Gruenberg has some questions for us after you weigh in with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason for the language that I think you have in front of you is it reflects the experience that the department has developed over the years with ADA compliance. In keeping with some of the previous comments you've heard, one of the bottom lines that the department has drawn over the years as it's more or less negotiated back and forth with people to arrive at what may be a reasonable accommodation under the particular circumstances that they face is that there are some bottom lines that are just essential to the act of hunting. And those two of those bottom lines are that you must be present in the field and there must be some degree of meaningful participation in the actual act itself, the take of the animal. That's the language that is replaced here in the new language, and we're asking you to put it in there because this is such a broad exemption, and it would be viewed as a legislative pronouncement on perhaps some of the decision making that's occurred earlier by the department and board. The second addition you see there is just to make it clear that as technology marches on, that the Board of Game retains the authority to decide what technology may or may not be appropriate in a given situation.
Mr. Saxby?
Yes, sir.
Just a question. Can you tell me how you, or maybe the sponsor can do this, how would you do it? I mean, how does it, I understand the prohibition, but how does it work? I mean, your note here says that has experience with disabled hunters trying to get around the law by hunting from their hospital beds. How would you manage a hunt?
As the sponsor of the bill, I can relate briefly how this works. In the past, in Texas, when this was first noted, it was on private property. The technology was set up whereby the game was herded in front of a camera. The camera was also tied in with the scope of a rifle, so that when the game was in the proximal area of the scope of the rifle, what you would be able to do is you would be able to use your computer to align the scope of the rifle, and there, by use a click of the mouse, you would actually trigger the firearm and it would shoot. Then they would have somebody on site to dispatch the animal if it was in error or whatever, and caretake for that critter.
Has this ever happened?
Yes. And that's why we're banning it.
And then if the issue was how does it work in the disability context, I can address that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, but please, Mr. Stack.
We actually faced a situation a couple of years ago where a person had won a permit to participate in a particular hunt, and the person was a quadriplegic. And his argument was that he wanted to have someone else essentially do everything for him, but he would be participating vicariously in the hunt from his hospital bed by hearing about it. The department drew the lines that I've referred to earlier and said, no, at essence, you must be present in the field, and to the maximum extent you are able, you must be meaningfully participating in the take of the animal. They ran that through the statewide ADA coordinator. The ADA coordinator was very supportive and helped us to draw the appropriate line. What ended up with was this person needed to be present as close as possible with their specially equipped van, and participating by, I can't remember whether it was video or audio link, but they had to actually be participating in the actual take of the animal as much as they could. And that was deemed a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. But that's the bottom line that the department has drawn so far, is presence in the field and at least some level of meaningful participation.
Well, it's not PPT, but I guess it's important. yes, Representative Grunberg.
When I served before, we passed a bill on that subject, and it's AS 1605403. Special licenses and permits for people who are blind and for people who have physical disabilities and for residents who are 65 age or older, they can get special licenses. I thought that there is some kind of
provision, and I'd ask Mr. Saxby, is this only by regulation, or is there another state statute on the subject allowing a vicarious hunt for somebody with a physical disability?
Mr. Chairman, through the chairman, there is no state statute that allows a vicarious hunt where you're not participating at all. That's the fear that the department has, is that this broad exemption might be interpreted suddenly to allow that. There is other authority. The Board of Game Authority under AS 1605-255A allows the board to develop means and methods for disability, persons with disabilities.
I see. I'm looking here at that step. What subsection are you in?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
It's 1605-255A. There's a whole list of board authorities there.
Right, I'm looking at them. Which one are you talking about?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's not at the beginning of the list.
Okay. Well, fine. I have a couple of questions. If I may just dialogue with Mr. Saxby for a minute, Mr. Chair.
Can I stop you?
I haven't so
far.
Okay.
We have 5 minutes.
Okay.
And he's a member of your caucus. If you go past three, we're not going to move his bill.
Okay. My question is, if somebody first of all, have you had any issues with anybody wanting to do remote fishing?
None that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Secondly, is there any question of jurisdiction here? Because you might very well have somebody in the state who's got the computer and is the customer, and the actual facility and stuff are out of the state. It doesn't apply.
It's covered
through
in the bill.
Chair, through the chair, Representative.
I'm sorry. Through the chair, Mr. Gruenberg, that is covered in the bill. You cannot do it in the state, and you cannot do it from the state. You cannot do it with a computer in the state, and you cannot have a facility in the state to do it.
My question is, do we have jurisdiction to prosecute somebody outside the state?
We would probably prosecute someone in the state that was whatever degree of participation they were engaging in the state, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That basically answers my questions.
Very good. Are there any other questions for the sponsor? Mr. Saxby, do you have any additional language you would like us to amend this bill with, or are you satisfied with version E?
I don't have it in front of me, Mr. Chairman, but I believe it substitutes present in the field and meaningfully participated for the word engaged, and it adds at the end, under regulations adopted by the Board of Game in subsection B, and we are satisfied with that.
That is correct. So we have version E in front of us. We have no amendments. Representative Gruenberg, last chance.
I would ask one more question. Is there any provision, or do you want any provision in here for forfeiture?
Wow.
You can consider that as the bill moves forward.
Yes.
That would be a whole other amendment. But that's something you might consider, because that would be a real additional teeth in this. They'd forfeit all their stuff and their real property, too, frankly.
Thank you. Representative Samuels.
Thank you. I'm going to assume that if we outlaw this, that nobody's going to set up the game farm, because you just can't set up a gun in the woods and hope a moose walks by. It has to be on a game farm. So if we outlaw it,
right,
then there won't be any forfeit. If we outlaw it, it's just never going to happen. I'm going to assume that. And with that, I would move the CS for House Bill 220 from committee with individual recommendations and a test fiscal note, if any.
Being in no objections, House Bill 220 passes from committee.
But they can do ADA, can I get a pilot's license?
With that at 258,
only vicariously.